Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so happy to welcome back Bill Larson from Larson & Larson. He is our legal eagle, and he is going to be answering the questions that you have sent in about intellectual property. And we have had quite a few, of course, a lot about AI, but also some really interesting ones about photographs. So welcome to Joy on Paper. Bill, how are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Well, you know, it's so funny. I love when I get long emails from people. I mean, they tell me everything that they're thinking about when they want to ask one question. But it's good because it really fills me in on what's happening out there in the world. Of course, a lot about AI. Let's leave AI to the end, because one of the things is it's getting into political season, so I'm getting some questions about what you can and cannot say about people. But one of the ones that series of questions I got was about using photographs. A lot of authors are now trying to be a little bit different, trying to do something a little unusual, even with their simple cozy mysteries or their simple, you know, romance stories. They're adding some kind of visual to help people, because, you know, we're a visual people now. So they're adding photographs to their books, or they're adding, if they are hiring somebody to draw something, they're doing that. So let's go over one of the big questions, of course, is so many people use Wiki Commons as a source for getting photographs.
Right.
What does it mean when it's free source? I mean, you can use anything on there you want?
No. So you can go on Wiki. The default setting is no, right?
See,
there's always limitations.
You see, people don't read the small print. They say it's promoted as Wiki Commons, a place where everybody can just help themselves to photographs. But that's not true.
You can use them, but there may be restrictions, because every owner of the copyright may have a different position. Some may say, just go ahead and use it. I don't care. Don't pay me any money. Some others may say, no, I want you to pay a license, or you can only use it in certain circumstances. And that oftentimes that may be commercial versus individual. They may want attribution. So there's a lot of limitations. It's just not a free-for-all.
So if you want to put it in your book, that's commercial, right?
That's commercial, right, because you're selling something. So you need to go through the process on Wiki Commons, and it has a spot where you click, and then you find the image or the photograph, and then it runs you through whether or not there are any terms or restrictions of the copyright owner.
And then it's up to you to contact the copyright owner.
Yeah. Usually it's digitally, and then you say, I'm going to do it in this way or the other, and then maybe they'll say that's okay, or maybe they'll say no, or maybe they'll say that's okay and I want some money. Each case is different.
And the ones that are from, like, the government, you know, photographs of soldiers or photographs of military equipment, if they were from the U.S. government, they belong to us anyway, so we don't have to pay the U.S. government, right?
No, the government also has the rights and copyrights. So
so you have to even pay them, even though we've already paid for this?
Yes, you pay twice. So what you have to remember is whenever you're using somebody else's material, you didn't take the photo, you didn't do the drawing, okay? Somebody else did. Then your default setting always has to be, does somebody else have rights? And if they do, are there restrictions in use to me?
Yeah, and then course, you have
and
to.
And then go from there.
You can go from there.
You can go from there. Right, because some of them may have entered the public domain, all right, so anybody can use them once it's in the public domain. And other people take pictures that don't care, but, you know, one of the famous military pictures is the guys putting the flag up in Iwo Jima, right? That was a very famous
oh, yeah.
picture. And it turned into a statute, right? So if you make a statute based on the picture, that's a derivative work, so you might need permission from the copyright holder. So you always got to make sure that if you're going to use somebody else's work, is there restrictions that you have to comply with to avoid getting in trouble?
Okay, so then it takes us to a question. Well, I have two people who have written books. Sometimes they're going ahead and writing the books and then looking for the answers afterwards. Now, one of them, it sounds like a wonderful book, and he wrote me a long story about how he decided, because, you know, inflation is so bad, and he has done a lot of work in analyzing, you know, prices and comparing prices and et cetera. Now, he's written a book already. He's already written the book. But he's talking about real products, real name brand products, comparing them, talking about them. And I believe he has photographs of them. But he can't use those?
Well, now you're discussing whether or not it's fiction or nonfiction.
No, it's nonfiction. It's a you know.
Right. So if you're stating facts, okay, and you're doing comparisons, then that falls under the fair use exception.
So if he's comparing real name brand products to other name brand products, can he use the photographs of these products, or does
if he takes the photos himself?
So if he goes into in some cases I know that he bought the product because he, like, some of the ones are food. So he said, you know, I tasted this and I tasted that. So he probably has the cans or the boxes, or particularly I think he was, like, really upset about cereals, partly about how they're cheating because they keep making the boxes smaller and smaller.
Shrinkflation.
Yeah, shrinkflation. So, but if he just takes a picture of it, he can use that in his book.
Yeah, but you have to be factual about it, okay? So you can't say cheating or make any derogatory statements. You just have to say, here's a fact, here's a picture of the product, this is a fact, I'm comparing it to here, to this other thing, and that's legal, okay?
So he can do that, because I think one of the things, he has like three versions of, Kellogg's or one of the cereals. Like, he said it's just within the past, since the pandemic, during the pandemic, this box of cereal was this size. And then sometime at the end of the pandemic, it got this size. And today, it is this size. And they're selling it for twice as much as the big one, during the pandemic back in 2020. So.
Right. The 10 pound bag of ice is now 7 pounds.
Yeah. So he's perfectly.
That's a fact.
Yeah. So he can show that.
If it's honest nonfiction and it's factual, you can do it.
Okay. Well, I think he's going to be relieved, because I have a feeling he didn't want to tell me exactly. I think he got frightened at as he realized he's done all this work, and then he got to the point where he said, "What am I going to do if I'm in trouble?" So, okay, I think he's a big sigh of relief.
Stick to the facts,
yeah.
As long as he doesn't put his own personal feelings in there, and he's just stating facts, then that is nonfiction work that falls under, you know, the fair use exception.
Well, that's good. Now, another. Writer who has traveled a lot is using photographs of herself in front of places, restaurants, famous places, wherever, in front of statues and stuff. Now, all of those she can use. She doesn't need permission to have something in the background.
Yeah, in the day of selfies, nobody's really getting bent out of shape about that anymore. There was some litigation back in the old days where people had rights in the looks of buildings and stuff, but that's pretty much gone away. So if you're taking pictures of yourself in front of statues or famous areas in public, okay, as long as there's not some other famous person in there, that's probably going to be okay.
And what if she took pictures of herself in a museum in where there's technically no photography?
Exactly. So you've already contracted not to do that. So if you go in there and you take pictures inside the museum, then you've broke the contract.
So then they could come after her.
Yes.
So okay. So she went to a lot of museums in Europe, and she took a lot of pictures. But I did feel that, you know, most of the places tell you you can't take photographs.
Right. It says it on the ticket.
Yeah. But if you're outside and there's a statue, you know, nobody's told you can't take a picture.
Exactly. You can take a picture of that. That's not going to be a problem.
Okay. So she's going to have to really go through all the photographs that she's done to decide if she broke the rule about no photographs, because they are very strict. I just hear, like, in the Ringling Museum, boy, oh, boy, you better not try to take a picture in the Ringling Museum.
No.
Boy, they
in the old days at concerts, you couldn't take any pictures. Remember at rock concerts?
Oh, yeah.
All kinds of concerts. But now every single person in the stand has a phone running the whole time taking pictures. So the bands have just given up on that, as long as it's not commercial.
Yeah.
They just let people do it.
Well, when you say commercial, if they put it in a book, that becomes commercial.
Exactly. So if you use your phone, you take a whole bunch of video, let's say at a rock concert or whatever, and then you put it all together and try to sell it, you can't do that. Because now you've gone commercial.
Okay. So, so if you have a picture with a famous person, you can't use that?
There may be restrictions on using it commercially, depending on who the person is.
Again, like if you're putting it in your book, you've written a book and you want to put a picture of you with some famous person, you have to get their permission?
Well, in a lot of cases, particularly if you're doing selfies and stuff, the famous person is allowing you to do it. So if you're just putting that in there as commentary, that's fine. But you can't make up fiction about the person, put the picture in there, and make up some story that is not true.
Okay, so it gets complicated.
Commercial versus non-commercial, fiction versus non-fiction, and then certain folks don't have any rights, like political people, in their image.
So you can do anything you want with political people.
Political people, yeah. If you take those pictures, they've pretty much given up their right to their personal appearance. But you can't say things that are false or derogatory.
Okay, well, that's going to be fun. You know, this is fun for me because during the last presidential election, I had maybe 30 books came to me. They're all derogatory to everybody. I read a cassette, and these were indie authors, obviously, because an author from a major publisher wouldn't have gotten that far. So sometimes indie authors just, you know, whoop, the typewriter's there, and they just zip it out and have no, you know, nothing to filter it. And they say terrible things about in one side or another. And I only reviewed one political book during that period, simply because I couldn't deal with it, and half the time I wasn't sure if those people were going to get sued, and so then I didn't want to talk about it on air, and I'd get sued, right? Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm back now. We got cut off.
Okay. I'm glad. I was
probably left over from that storm.
That's it. I heard a beep, and you were gone.
Yep.
Yeah, and I was mentioning that I only did one interview with about a political book in the 2020 election, because I felt, you know, it was safe. It was from a major publisher, but so many times the indie authors don't have a filter. So
right,
you know,
so
and
political commentary is a fair use.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm still going to be cautious about that. but using people's name, you know, nowadays, and it really does drive me crazy. So many authors will compare like the major characters, they will compare them to somebody famous. They'll say, oh, he says, he looks like Lionel Messi, you know, or somebody like that. And, you know, the love interest. Well, you know, Jane Austen didn't have that ability to compare, you know, or to describe her characters based on movie stars or famous people. She actually had to describe them. But
right, so it's fiction. If it's fiction and now you're comparing it to real people, then you may have crossed the line.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, I find it very annoying, actually, as I'm reading a book, if every character, because so many times nowadays, I mean, I don't know who these people are. You know, like, just, they can tell me, oh, he's as handsome as this one. Now, Lionel Messi, I happen to know because I like soccer, but, you know, if they compare him to some current movie star, I probably have never seen the guy. So why do that? You know, that's lazy writing as far as
I'm
concerned.
And in a passing reference, it's probably not going to be a big deal.
Yeah, but not to, like, throughout the book say, oh, he looks like...
Exactly.
Yeah, it gets too much. So people have to be careful on that side. And
yeah.
And and that brings us to AI, which is driving me crazy. I have to be careful now reading books, and I'm, you know, I have a phenomenal memory, and I've read so many books over the years that I do. I mean, I recognize styles. There's been times when I've read a book by a famous author, you know, a best-selling author, and I will read the book, and I say, well, I know that person didn't write that book because I know that author's writing from years of reading. So I can recognize, like, when sometimes an author gives up and then, you know, gives it to somebody else to write for them. I'm very cognizant now of looking to see the patterns in writing. Now, do people have to, first of all, let's go to covers, because a lot of indie authors are using AI for covers.
Right.
And I'm not sure exactly how they're doing it, or what they're... There are all sorts of AI programs now online, and you can just take any AI program, and you automatically have a right to use it as a commercial, you know, for your cover of your book?
Well, that's still up in the air legally, because AI is going to change over the next few years, and we'll have to see where it shakes out. But AI has two parts. Number one, AI has the ability to collect a lot of data. And then you can program it to take that data in a certain way and kick out a result. And where that goes, nobody knows right now, because it's an evolving technology. In the area of medicine, AI is going to be instrumental. In the area of copyright, it's going to be scary, because how will you know if a person wrote the book? How do you know if a person painted the painting? Although they are coming up with AI that will be able to tell you if AI wrote or created the painting.
So you feed a picture into the computer, and the computer comes back and says, oh, that was done by AI, not Van Gogh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've done that for a while in the education system to see if people are plagiarizing papers. And so that technology's kind of been around, but there's a bunch of lawsuits out there. We don't know where it's going to go. I would give it 5-10 years before we have an answer of really how it's going to shake out.
So are you involved personally in any AI lawsuits yet?
No, not me. That's for the really big, big companies, because the really big, big players who are using it.
Because it's complicated.
So no, it's very complicated. It's very, very complicated. I don't understand how it works. But I'm not a digital guy.
Exactly, because it's so complicated. And well, any of the software that's a specialty. You know, you have to really be able to read that software.
You have to be a specialist in that area. And I'm too old to learn any new tricks. So,
well, I think you have enough ordinary plagiarism and copyright infringement and trademark infringement to keep you busy, I think.
Because most of what I'm seeing now is photographs. So people go around the world taking really nice photographs, and then they publish them on the internet, and then somebody who's selling mugs or t-shirts or something sees the photo, and they don't realize that it's copyrightable, and they stick it on a shirt and start selling it, and then they get sued.
Yeah, I can see that happening, because it's really people are trying, as I said, you know, people are trying to find ways to make money, and unfortunately, this kind of thing happens. So you're getting those kind of lawsuits.
Yeah, not a lot of those lawsuits with photographs. Those are the ones that I'm seeing the most now. Not a lot with paintings so much anymore. It's mostly photographs. We used to do a lot of architecture, elevations, you know, blueprints and stuff like that. That's kind of petered out also. So we'll see where copyright goes with this AI.
Wow. It's a strange new world. I'm not sure that it's a brave new world.
Ever changing.
It is. Well, I think I know at least one author is breathing a sigh of relief today, because I think he's got a few hundred pages written of this book, comparing things, hoping to help people fight inflation with a little knowledge, because...
when he gets all the way done, he should take it to a copyright lawyer for a final inspection to make sure there's nothing in there that's going to get him in trouble.
Okay, that's what I'll... Well, he's listening today, so that's what he has to do, because... He's hoping, you know, you never know, because sometimes these kind of books really can take off. It is something people are desperately trying to find out.
But if you say something that causes a huge loss of sales for one particular company, they might get upset and come after you.
Okay, so then you have that. Well, that's why
just out of one of the mean-spirited lawsuits. Just we call the punishment lawsuit.
Yeah, like what was that one with the Jack Daniels, right?
Yeah, the one with the toy. Yeah, they lost. We predicted that.
Yeah, you did. I remember
dog toy. Yeah, I knew they'd lose that one.
Okay. Well, Bill, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's always a joy to talk to you. And people can... Yeah, you can contact Bill at...
Larson Patent Law. Go to my website and put in a request.
Have
a question.
Okay, Bill.
Yeah, Larson Patent Law.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, Patsy.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. All right. So, you know, you never know. And that's why, really... People, be careful out there, and go ahead and, you know, if you have any questions, contact Bill. He's a great guy, and he will help you. He'll walk you through copyright if you need the help with that, and he'll talk to you definitely about trademarks. People, if you develop a character or characters, particularly if you're writing a children's book, you really, really have to trademark it, because you're going to be in trouble. We had a local author 3 or 4 years ago. She came out with a really lovely book. She didn't trademark it. And suddenly they're selling her products out of someplace, somewhere. Anyway, we're going to have a literary gem from Jim Lamb and a few commercials, and then we'll be right back with my guests. Okay.
It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. That, my friend, is the way to open a novel. I'm Jim Lamb, let's get started. Who knows what Charles Dickens was thinking when he penned his famous and memorable opening to A Tale of Two Cities. Whatever it was, he was right on. The only opening line more famous, and even older, is from the Torah. Barashit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et ha'eres. What does it mean? I'll give you a hint. In the beginning, God created. Well-crafted openings grab readers' attention and set up a great story. Let's take Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, for example. It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. If you're familiar with Austen's book, you know what a perfect setup that is. How about Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy? Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. That, my friends, is a riddle wrapped up in an enigma with a side order of fries. French fries. One of my favorite books is George Orwell's 1984, so it must have a great opener. You bet your big brother's life it does. It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. Wait a minute. 12 is the highest number a clock can strike. Or is it? The Stranger by Albert Camus has a short and not very sweet opening. Here it is. Mother died today. Kind of odd, yet suitable in every way. And of course I've got to bring up Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea. I always do. He was a man who fished alone in a skiff in the Gulf Stream, and he had gone 84 days now without taking a fish. If you can find a better opening to a book written by a Nobel Prize winning author, let me know. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about opening lines.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi! This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and this is such a thrill for me because I love the podcast, and now we have this gorgeous Nat Geo book called Greeking Out, Epic Retellings of Classic Greek Myths, and it is by a father and daughter team. Boy, oh boy, this is exciting. Kenny Curtis and his daughter Jillian Hughes. I'm so happy to welcome you both to the program.
Oh, we're happy to be here. Thank you, Patsy.
Okay, well, you know, this is exciting because I love this subject and I love your podcast. I've been a fan of Greek mythology since I was a little kid, and now you're making it available for so many kids. And there is one word that every kid in America, I think must know, one Greek word at least right now, and that is thanks, thanks to Aaron Rodgers. They know something about Achilles.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. Yes, we do know a few things about Achilles, don't we?
Okay. So who wants to start? Kenny, do you want to start? Explain how you got your daughter to work with you.
It's more the other way around. She's been nagging me since she was a little kid to write a book, and the only way she could get me to finally do it was to write it with me. But I was lucky enough to be working with National Geographic Kids on a radio version of their Weird But True show at Sirius XM. And they wanted to do a podcast about Greek mythology because it was featured in another children's book series called Zeus the Mighty by Crispin Boyer. and it's about animals in a pet shop that think they're the Greek gods because the owner of the pet shop listens to a podcast called Greeking Out. And they thought, let's make the actual podcast. So we did that. I was able to bring Jillian in to help me write the scripts for the podcast, and the rest is history, ancient and modern history, because it took off. We're now into season 9, and the podcast itself now has a spin-off book that we're here to talk about today.
Well, this is exciting. This is really exciting. And by the way, Christian Boyer has been on my program, I think, for every one of the books. I love him.
Yes.
He is just one of the favorite guests here on Joy on Paper. We have so much fun when he joins me. So, Jillian, tell me, what did you think when you got the chance to do this book? Program.
Yeah, I was excited. I mean, it was great. Like, I love the idea of working with my dad, and I like to say I'm uniquely qualified to write in his voice because I've been subjected to it my entire life. So I've really got it down pat at this point. And yeah, it's been so fun. It's such a cool and like zany project to work on. Really funny, great chance to develop some cool characters. And then when it got the opportunity to be turned into a book, I mean, I was just thrilled. It was so fun, and it's been a dream come true to get to write a book. And I love working with my dad. He is he's a great co-author, and we have a great time together. So it's been a great experience.
Well, Kenny, tell me, now, of course, you two wrote the book, but the illustrations are also a big part of this book. They are beautiful. Tell me how the illustrator got, how did you work with the illustrator?
Well, that was the thing. Like, that's when, Jillian and I both agreed, that's when we knew we had written the book. Like, we didn't quite, it didn't feel really real until we saw Javier Espila's illustrations, and they are amazing. He really, you know, read the stories, listened to the podcast, and brought them to life with an excitement and adventure, but enough playfulness to make it work really wonderfully for kids and families. It feels like an animated show and a comic book and a myth at the same time. He really brought life to it. And, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of interaction back and forth with Javier, so that's why I was really thrilled when we saw these illustrations, because it just takes it to, it gives a whole new level to what it is that we're trying to create. I'm still thrilled. Every time I look at them, I get excited.
Well, they are. They are wonderful. But as you said, you wrote the stories, and you tell us this process. Greek mythology sometimes is a little bit scary. So Jillian, when you decided to do this, how did you pick the stories, and how did you, well, let's say, get it to the point where you could not scare children?
A kid-friendly version?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a meeting before each podcast where we pick what episodes and what stories we're going to cover for that season. And we have a lot of help. We have a great producer, Emily Eberhart, and we have a team of scholars that work with us that help us select some really great stories and help make sure we stay on track. But, you know, we definitely have to downplay certain aspects of some of these myths to make it less scary or violent or anything like that. And, yeah, we do take creative liberties to try to make it a little more kid-friendly. There are some stories that we're just never going to tell because there's no way to sort of make them appropriate for a kid audience. But, you know, that's part of the fun, is to try to take these stories and distill them down into fun, interactive ways for kids to appreciate them and still come away loving mythology.
Well, you've done a great job of it. It's really very clever. Your combinations of gods and goddesses are lots of fun. So it's, you know, wonderful read. Now, Kenny, were you always interested in mythology when you were young? Were you interested?
I was kind of a nerd. You know, back before it was cool to be into Dungeons and Dragons, I was into Dungeons and Dragons. You know, it was like the thing when you did it but didn't tell anybody. That was most of my childhood. And I love the Edith Hamilton Greek mythology book. That was, I love that a lot. But, you know, I felt like I was very comfortable with the subject matter and felt like I could talk mythology. And then we got about a season and a half in, and I was done. That's all I knew. I did not realize how much more there is, how many different versions there are, how much rich history there is, and also how many myths there are from around the world that are similar to or inspired by or possibly inspired Greek myths. So that's the great thing about the podcast is we're kind of going all around the world as well as Greeking out. We actually can, you know, we will do Norse mythology and we'll be Norsing around or Ragnarocking out, as we call it, and take little field trips to different parts of the world for myths from all across the planet.
Well, it's so much fun. And now, when I was young, my favorite class in school was Latin. I loved Latin. Like, was one of the only classes that I didn't skip, because I skipped most of my high school years and spent them at the Detroit Metropolitan Museum. But I, or Detroit Institute of Art. And when I was, you know, so thrilled with Latin because I didn't, you know, I didn't know it. it was something I actually had to study, like chemistry and biology. So I got, of course, from the Latin side, I learned, of course, all the gods in you know, in Latin. And then, of course, we also studied Greek mythology because that was part of our classes. And so the Edith Hamilton book was also just a wonderful guidebook for me. So what's your background, Jillian, in mythology? Did your dad tell you stories when you were young?
Yes, he did. He told me a lot of stories, some Greek, some not. So, yeah, I definitely got a good basis there. And then in school growing up, we learned about mythology, and they're just great universal stories, you know. I mean, even if you don't have a comprehensive background, most people are familiar with, you know, Zeus and Hades and some of these characters that are just so still relevant and still talked about in our everyday society. So, yeah, I've always liked Greek mythology. I really like Madeline Miller's book now, and it's definitely having a moment, as we say, becoming more popular now, the Greek mythology. But, yes, I'm very thankful that we have a team of experts on our staff that help keep us on track and educate us, because the more we do, I mean, it's just an endless amount of information out there, more layers upon layers and different versions and alternate endings. And it really is like a whole universe of mythology. And we try our best to be as educational as possible and to kind of stick to the original intent of the stories and to call out if we are telling a different version or changing anything. So, yeah, we really try to keep the spirit of mythology alive, even if we're out of our depth, so to speak.
Well, I think, did you get to talk to Crispin about it?
No, we never spoke to Crispin about this particular project. But he certainly is a wealth of knowledge, that's for sure.
Oh, he is. He is. And as I said, when he first came on, and my listeners just, they were crazy about these books because they are so beautiful. And again, you know, something for children to learn and to read. And with this book, the kids will love it because of the photographs, but also because of the wonderful way that you put together these stories. At each story, you have sort of like a little blurb about what it's about, what's going to happen in the story. So, Kenny, how did you decide on how did you portion this out between you?
Well, we decided that the book should have some myths that the listeners to the podcast were familiar with, but we also have some brand new myths in there that the listeners to the podcast haven't heard. And the beauty of a Nat Geo book is, of course, all of the extra stuff that comes in. It's, you know, in addition to having great stories that have been around since, you know, ancient times, we also have a lot of, you know, fast facts and relevant and features in there, like, you know, how to eat like the Greeks, and and a whole background on sports. You know, we get to an episode, a part about the Olympics and things like that. So there's a ton of different ways in which we and the folks at Nat Geo bring information and facts into the actual stories themselves. And at the end of every story, we also have a kind of a conclusion that talks about how this story is relevant to kids today. In terms of choosing who would write what, you know, a lot of it went back to the episodes of the podcast. Jillian and I sort of trade off on that. We get a lot of help from Emily Everhart, our producer, who also, you know, steps in and writes, and some folks from Nat Geo consult with us. We have a lot of great experts. Dr. Diane Klein is one of our curriculum experts from American University. So there's a lot of people that take a look at our scripts and say, yeah, this is, okay, this is the spirit of what the myth was about. And it is a joy and a major collaborative process.
Well, I'm so happy you used the word joy.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, Jillian, tell my listeners about your favorite gods and goddesses stories. Which ones do you want to, we have to leave them with something. They have to know and learn something.
I don't know. There's so many. I love all the ones that feature the strong female women leads. You know, I love Circe. She's probably my favorite character. I love the story of her and how she, you know, was isolated on this island all by herself and just sort of overcame her own personal demons and became like one of the most famous witches in Greek history. I love that. I love her tie-in with Odysseus. Athena is another great character. She's in a lot of awesome myths. And Atalanta, that is another one that maybe people might not have heard about. She was a strong woman who she was abandoned in the woods when she was just a baby, and she was raised by bears. And then she grew up and became like this amazing runner and great hunter, and then she won a race or lost a race to this guy who ended up marrying her. It's a very long, complicated story, but she's a great character. I know. I'm like, how far down this rabbit hole do I want to go?
You know, you wrote it beautifully.
So many great stories out there. I love Pandora's Box, teaching you like kind of why bad things happen to good people, how that came about. So there's a lot of really, really great myths out there and a lot of good lessons that are
exactly, and you've done a great job with that. And there were lots of strong Greek women, boy, oh boy. So Kenny, one of the ones I thought was a great drawing capturing the character was Hades. So did you get a kick out of that one?
Yeah, I love the way there's sort of a wink and a nod to the Disney Hercules movie, but I love the way he made Hades' emotions look so clear. Like, Hades looks a little sad, you know, in the Persephone chapter, and he should be. You know, he has a human emotion. I think that's what's always great about the Greek gods, of course, is that they have such human emotions. It's not God like this all-knowing, all-being, benevolent light like most of us believe in. These are petty, jealous, vengeful, embarrassed, awkward deities that have the same emotions that humans do. And I think that helps kids understand that even the heroes that they root for sometimes make bad choices. And you can really see a full character and a full spectrum of emotions in all these characters. And I think Javier's illustrations really reflect that. And I was really, it's funny that you say that about Hades, because in the myth about Hades and Persephone, you can really see that instead of making Hades look like this evil devil guy, makes him look a little like maybe nervous, scared, embarrassed. It's a lovely illustration.
Yeah, that's what it struck me that was an unusual look, and I thought very appropriate for this book. So tell people, yeah, how can they, first of all, the book is beautiful. Everybody, you really have to get this book. Kids will love it. Adults will love it. You'll spend really hours. As you said, with Nat Geo, there's always all these little additional tidbits in the book. So you pick it up once, you read it, then you go back and you read it again. And it's a wonderful book. And for all of my listeners, I always tell them when I have a Nat Geo Kids book that if they don't have a child in their life, just go online, order it, and send it to a children's hospital in your area or to St. Jude's or Shriners. Because a kid in a hospital will have hours of fun. you know, these poor kids, they're going through chemo. They're going through all sorts of, you know, rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. To have this book called Greeking Out, Epic Retellings of Classic Greek Myths, they would be so thrilled. And this is a wonderful, wonderful book. It's priced, as always, with Nat Geo. It's just the right price. It's top quality. Nat Geo books are the best.
Yeah, I'm amazed. Like, I wasn't expecting such a great physical quality product. Oh. I just like to walk around and hold the book.
Me
too. It's really great, but it's as silly as it sounds, you know, with, you know, and Jillian can testify this because she's got two of my grandkids, but with my grandkids around, and little kids, you want to have a sturdy book.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to drop it. They're going to carry it by the pages and stuff like that. Kids aren't known for taking good care of things. So a flimsy paperback might not last that long. This is not that.
No, this is not that.
This is a great quality book.
This is a top quality book. Not a great, it's the top, mm-hmm. because it's Nat Geo, and they always do things just perfectly. The binding, the paper, the covers, mm-hmm. perfect. And they have the perfect writers. So you can't go wrong.
Ah. Thank you.
So that's it, you know. Kenny Curtis and Jillian Hughes, you are really both terrific. And tell people quickly where they can find your podcast and how they can get to that.
Yeah, podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. Under Greeking Out, you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you like to listen.
And you're up to season what?
It's season 9 is coming out soon.
Woo, woo. You guys are doing a great job, and I'm sure that a lot of kids, you know, in their cars, I'm sure parents are playing the podcast in their cars and saying, oh, yes, 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 thank you so much, Kenny and Jillian, keeping my kids busy and learning something interesting and valuable in life. The two of you, I think, are fantastic. I'm so happy always with father and daughter teams. I think it's great, and I'm so very proud to always promote Nat Geo books, and particularly this one because it's my kind of book. Greeking Out. Oh, it's fantastic.
Thank you, Patsy.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Thank you again for being on Joy on Paper. You two are a joy. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Wow. What a book. People, really, this is such a beautiful book. I just, when I got it, sometimes things just come right. And this is, I was talking to somebody who had a kid who was sick, and I had some Nat Geo books, which I gave, and I got some more, because it was, I know, for me, my childhood was Nat Geo magazines in those days. It was wonderful. Everybody got them. And you can still get them. You can get Nat Geo magazines. And to have that magazine and to read that magazine will make you feel good. And I still have some of my dad's from 1954, I think, 55 are my oldest ones. And I know that my dad read those books. And just for me to hold them in my hand and to read them, knowing that he read them, that's the power of Nat Geo. For over 100 years, they have inspired people, and they will inspire you. No matter what age you are, and they have the books for young kids, and they have these books that you can read over and over for years, and you will be inspired. As I was, I became a world traveler because of Nat Geo. So I owe them so much, and it's always an honor to have a Nat Geo book on the program. And particularly, I think Kenny and Jillian are absolutely delightful, and you can see that in their book. And Crispin Boyer, Zeus the Mighty author, is also one of my favorite, and I always get such nice emails from you when Crispin is on, because he is a fantastic writer. So Anyway, next week, I want to talk to you about next week because it's a very, very important day. Carol J. Perry will be here and on Joy on Paper, and we're talking to her. You know, as I told you before, she was the first in-studio guest here with me in Joy on Paper back in 2015. That's over 9 years ago. I can't believe it. And it was a thrill then. And she was just starting off, and when she comes on Tuesday, she's going to talk about her upcoming birthday, which is going to be celebrated on, well, she's got a big celebration coming up, but she was born on Halloween Eve a number of years ago, and she will tell us how many when she gets here. And it's going to be lots of fun to talk to her about her new book, Now You See It, which is the 13th book in her Witch City Mystery series. And it's a fantastic book. So I hope that you'll remember to, you can pre-order it right now because it's going to come out on Tuesday. And that's why she's going to be here to celebrate that and to tell us about her other book and her series that is set here in right here in Florida, which is called Haunted Haven. I love that series too. And this is just shows you that you never know. You can retire from a job and retire, and you think you're in retirement, and you get the idea to do something, and you can do it. And if you work hard, wow, you can accomplish a lot. And I know that I can tell you right now that Carol J. Perry puts in a lot of work. She will write 1,000 words a day when she's determined. And it doesn't matter if she has to go lock herself in a hotel room. She will get that 1,000 pages done every day. And that's why she's doing book number 14 in a major series and book number 4 in another series, you know. It's a way to keep busy, that's for sure. And I special thanks again to Bill Larson for his advice about photographs, something that you should all think about and be careful. We didn't get a chance again to talk about what you say online and what you say on Facebook. Please be careful what you write there, because we've had a few authors who got themselves in trouble because they wrote things that they shouldn't have written. So that's just a little warning to you. And again, make sure that you pre-order Carol's book. And also Doug Brunt's book just came out on Tuesday. And that book is fantastic. And it's called Rudolf Diesel, Genius, Power, and Deception at the Eve of World War I. It's a fantastic book. Anyway, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So get busy. Start writing. November's coming up, and you can do NaNoWriMo. Okay, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. He saluted me. I saluted him because I really, really should have been a general, and I should be making speeches at the Pentagon. Okay, bye-bye, everybody.